So that just about wraps it up for us here on Amand Love. But before saying goodbye, Doug, I wanted to thank you for kind of getting the SACTU solidarity people mobilized to talk about their history, to talk about, a chapter.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players.
They have their exits and their entrances.
And one man in his time plays many parts.
His acts being seven ages.
At first, the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms.
Then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and shining morning face creeping like snail unwillingly to school.
Then the lover sighing like furnace with a woeful ballad made to his mistress's eyebrow.
Then a soldier full of strange oaths and bearded like the pard.
Jealous Nonna, sudden and quick in quarrel.
That is the sound of Shakespeare's famed All the World's a Stage speech, performed by different people in quarantine and presented by the Guardian newspaper online for a very special occasion. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio in Montreal. I'm your host, Sarah Day. It's April 23rd, 2020. Because of the pandemic, the Quebec government has extended the ban on public events until August, which means Montreal's summer festival season and much of the arts calendar is effectively canceled. We continue to navigate this new strange world, spending our time turning inwards instead of outwards, safe at home and online instead of out in the world, and certainly not at the theater. One of the things we are expected to do while waiting out this virus is to use your time productively. Get creative, declutter, write the book you'd always planned. William Shakespeare, it has been said, wrote King Lear, the story of an aging monarch dividing his inheritance between daughters, while under quarantine himself. This seems to suggest that if old Bill could write a classic family drama while under lockdown, what could you do with your time? Today, April 23rd, happens to be an important date in the world of the Bard. He was baptized on April 26th, 1564, in Stratford-upon-Avon, suggesting he was born a few days earlier, on the 23rd perhaps, and died on this same date, 404 years ago, in the very same town. In between those two dates, he wrote 39 plays and 154 sonnets, brought us romances, like Romeo and Juliet, Antony and Cleopatra, fantasy like The Tempest and A Midsummer's Night's Dream. And, oh, the lines. Lines like, all that glitters is not gold, fair is foul and foul is fair, double double, toil and trouble, all the world's a stage, and stories that still resonate today. As his contemporary Ben Jonson said, not for an age, but for all time. So for a special episode, in the midst of a global pandemic, tonight's hour is devoted to William Shakespeare. You will hear from the former and current directors of Repercussion Theatre and a group of Montrealers that have met to read and discuss Shakespeare over a beer on and off since 2009. And some actors tell us what the Bard means to them, and we will have a few monologues to delight you as well. First up, Amanda Kellogg is an actor, writer, and artistic director of Repercussion Theatre, which presents Shakespeare in the Park. You likely caught last season's Measure for Measure at your neighborhood green space. I asked her about this recurring reference online to King Lear, the play that Shakespeare supposedly wrote while he was in quarantine.
I had sort of heard some things about what Shakespeare might have been up to when the theaters were closed due to the plague, because that was kind of something that happened fairly frequently during his lifetime. He was born not long after a huge outbreak of the plague, and there was another one when he was about 3 years old, and many people around him had died.
But Amanda was skeptical about this expectation that we should all be creating masterpieces at this time.
You know, give us a break. It's been 2 weeks. I'm pretty sure he didn't write the play in 2 weeks. Or in the first 2 weeks of being locked down. You know, I'm sure he, like the rest of us, spent a whole lot of time being worried and afraid and thinking about his family and thinking about what the heck did this mean for society. And, you know, and then I think, yeah, eventually he probably put pen to paper because that is what he did. That was his way of dealing with the world. And so, you know, I think he would have been writing, if there was a nuclear, you know, war happening, he would have been writing whatever the situation was, because that was his outlet. That was his way of dealing with difficult situations. So, but I mean, using it to put pressure on people to be more productive seems like a backwards way of looking at it. To me.
Do we know what his habits were? We always talk about the habits of great people and CEOs running companies do this by 5 a.m. Do we have much on the record about what his day would have been like?
All I kind of know is what we have in the plays themselves. And what I find super interesting is the fact that none of his plays are about the plague. You know, there are glancing references. The most sort of the most that a plague ever figures into the action of a play, from what I know, is actually in Romeo and Juliet, where it's a super weird moment where Friar Lawrence gets his friend Friar John to go give the message to Romeo that, like, don't freak out, Juliet's just pretending to be dead. But Friar John, in going to another town, is seen, and they think he has the plague, and so they lock him up in isolation, and he can't get to Romeo. And so the whole kind of, you know, tragedy of the play hinges on someone being mistakenly quarantined, which I don't think I ever fully really felt in a deep way until sort of this experience. And so I find that really interesting, you know, going through this. I'm suddenly, like, struck by all of these glancing references to the plague would have been so visceral for Shakespeare's audiences in a way that I don't know that they've ever been for us, you know? Certainly people, I'm sure, who lived through Spanish flu or people who lived through prior huge epidemics, they might sort of feel those references more, but I'll be really interested to kind of reread some of these plays and see where those references land now, having a direct experience with, you know, not the plague, because obviously dying from the plague was pretty horrific. But we have a more sort of visceral understanding of this situation, I think, now than we ever have.
Speaking with Amanda Kellogg of Repercussion Theater, I'm wondering if there's anything from his work or any Shakespeare tangential material that you're looking at as a source of comfort or solace right now.
You know what? I have been so consumed with just trying to sort of run a theater company during this pandemic that I'm really actually looking forward to having the time to read more. I keep seeing how bored people are and I keep, you know, yearning for that time. So so I'm not necessarily finding any comfort directly right now, but I am like looking forward to rereading these plays and looking at them through a new lens. I have been thinking a lot actually of, it's a very quick mention, Hamlet talks about, you know, I could, oh God, I'm going to totally mangle this quote. I should know it. You know, I could be inside an acorn and count myself a king of infinite space. Just the notion of, you know, one's imagination can allow us to not be limited by the space that we're in, except that that confining space can also give us bad dreams.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a, you know, it's a power that we have, our imagination, to either make this time, you know, totally livable, or it can be totally awful, partly because nothing is either good or bad, but thinking makes it so.
I can totally understand that you are extremely busy right now. How are things with Repercussion and your work at the moment?
Yeah, we're spending a lot of time connecting with colleagues across the country who are all, you know, facing a kind of existential crisis a little bit, thinking about what is the role of theater in a time when people cannot assemble in rooms together. And I think that's a really interesting question to sort of sit with. And I'm trying really hard not to jump to conclusions or feel the pressure to come up with an answer, but to try to really be present in this experience, because I think it's such a an amazing, in a way, thing that we're all experiencing, this really fascinating, horrible, wonderful kind of pause in our you know, churning lives. And I feel it's important to kind of not just tap dance on top of it, but actually try to stay present in it, and then hopefully have something to say about it eventually.
If you don't have a copy of the canon at home, Shakespeare's online and easily readily available if you have an internet connection, is there any other play by the Bard or by anyone else that you would recommend for someone who has the time to kind of escape?
Oh my gosh, there's so many good ones. I mean, there's so many that are about sort of rebirth and forgiveness and compassion, and those are always the ones that sort of draw me in. We just did Measure for Measure, you know, last summer, and it was such a great one. I love, you know, Much Ado About Nothing. That's another great one about forgiveness. And and the other one that I've been rereading lately is The Winter's Tale, which was also another fascinating one. But they're all good.
Amanda, thank you so much for sharing some time to talk about Shakespeare and this thing about King Lear that keeps popping up again and again. It's so fascinating to get your take on it.
Yeah, and I say, you know what? That's what Shakespeare did during the plague. I think everyone should do whatever moves them, you know? That's what's most important to do. It's not your job to write King Lear. It's already been done, so you do you.
Well said. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thanks, Sarah.
That was Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director of Repercussion Theater, which is set to make an announcement soon about their upcoming season. RepercussionTheater.com. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. This hour, we explore Shakespeare on the day widely believed to be his baptism day, as well as his death. Before Amanda's tenure at Repercussion, actor Paul Hopkins was at the reins of the company starting in 2007. He is a talented actor, was a finalist for the Christopher Plummer Award for Classical Theatre, and has also performed at Stratford in Ontario. Well, Paul, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me. How have you been?
Oh, I've been all right. I live in Kitchener now.
Okay.
I live in Ontario, so, it's a far stretch from Montreal, but I get back to Montreal quite a bit.
Are you kind of going through what a lot of working artists are going through, which is, you know, things being hit on pause, basically?
Well, I mean, working artists, as everybody kind of knows, I'm primarily an actor, so,
yeah.
You know, having a period where I'm not working is not entirely unfamiliar, you know what I mean? So, I've got a lot of little things that I'm doing at the house, sort of in prep, I guess, for when work does come again.
I'm so glad that you answered the call to come on. Mike Patterson, the comedian, is the one who said you should talk to Paul because, yeah. You know, with your experiences working with Repercussion Theater, we spoke with Amanda Kellogg earlier in the show with what she's been thinking about and how Shakespeare kind of what we can relate to from his work and his time and compare it to today. So what have you been kind of thinking about these last several weeks as our world has been, like in Macbeth, the world turned upside down, as the witches say?
Well, I've been very lately, in the last few months before social isolation, I've been thinking a lot about The Tempest, and I was thinking about what an incredible play The Tempest is, because it's sort of an homage to Shakespeare. In a way, it's the closest thing to an autobiography that we've got. And also, it's very much a play about theater in and of itself. So, and I wrote this paper, I was doing my master's degree, and I wrote a paper about wonder and the sense of awe in The Tempest. There's a lot of spectatorship going on in that. And it's also, again, like I say, it's also very much a metaphor for theater, you know. The island that Prospero lands on with his daughter becomes kind of his theater, where he controls the spirits, you know. And later on, we get into the famous speech where he goes, "These are spirits, are all actors. These are actors, are all spirits, and are melted into air, into thin air." So this is one of the things that I've been noodling on, about the sense of wonder and how Shakespeare talks about wonder and the theater and how much wonder plays is featured in this play, which is an homage to theater.
Do you feel?
But then, well, okay.
No, go ahead.
But then, so, anyways, I had this idea of doing it, maybe I'll do a Zoom, online reading of it or something like that. But then I started to think about it and went, oh my goodness, the play is about a guy who is stuck on an island with his daughter. And which is, totally isolated from the world. And isn't that prescient right now? Isn't that exactly what so many of us are going through? You know, we're all sort of hobbled into our houses. And then many of us are with our kids, 24/7. You know what I mean? And you go a little bit squirrely, I think. So I think it would be really interesting to maybe read through that play. And maybe I will organize a Zoom reading of it, just to see how The Tempest maybe reflects on this period of pandemic, you know.
Yeah, I think people are, crazy things are happening in people's homes in terms of, pushing boundaries or certain behaviors. You know, I feel like a lot of people must be jumping out of their skin, and I've never thought of it that way. But yeah, being stuck on an island with your crazy sorcerer dad and wondering if
right.
When we're all let go and free and allowed to roam again, if we're going to have that same sense of wonder as Prospero's daughter does when she comes across these shipwrecked humans.
That's exactly it, right? When Miranda, she's got that "Oh, brave new world" is the first thing she says when she sees all the courtiers, and sees essentially adults for the first time in her life other than her father. Mm-hmm. And of course, the other thing is that she sees Ferdinand. She falls in love with, and again, she's a woman. She's never really seen a man or a boy, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, again, there's a sense of wonder when she sees somebody of the opposite sex in this case. And she, you know, she's filled with a sense of wonder and awe. Yeah, Miranda, actually. Miranda is, I think it's Italian. In Italian, Miranda is amazement. So again, you know, she is sort of the embodiment of amazement. At the very beginning of The Tempest as well, she's the one who is on the shore of the island witnessing this tempest that dashes the ship and the mariners in the ocean, you know. So, yeah.
Speaking with Paul Hopkins, who is formerly running Repercussion Theater and thus Shakespeare in the Park in Montreal, what you said about wonder had me thinking about how in some ways you could choose, you know, obviously there's a lot of difficult circumstances for a lot of people, but that you could choose to look at being asked to stay home and cut off contact with people, at least in person, as a time to slow down, to be forced to try new things or watch something you haven't watched or read books that you bought and never read. And it's when you say the word wonder, that's what it makes me think of, is that we're being kind of looking at the world through a new lens.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I mean, wouldn't you agree that we're all sort of being forced to, it's forcing us into a bit of introspection, isn't it? A little bit of, I mean, some good and maybe some bad, but I think a lot of us are facing our own demons at this time. I certainly know that I've gone through phases where I've just been like really questioning what am I doing with my life, and because I've got so much quiet time now, you know, so all these little demons are coming up. And again, I go back to The Tempest, and you know, Prospero was kicked out of his dukedom and banished to an island, in a sense, or left to die, and then ended up on this island. And all he's had to think about for 13 years is the people who did this to him, you know. And so here we are as well, you know, probably like, you know, like spirits sort of, or our pasts kind of being conjured during this quiet time as we sort of come to terms with things perhaps that other people have done to us, or regrets that we've had, or things that we could have done differently. I don't know. Can you relate to that? Does that seem to be something that you're going through these days?
Well, I find it really hard to have extra time on my hands. I always try to fill the day with as much as possible, and I still am working, so like my days are still full, but it definitely comes to the weekend where there is no matinee. There's no dance show to go to, or event to work at. And, I have that sensation of too much time on my hands, but I'm trying to frame it as it's good. It's look at it as a gift to slow down.
Trying to frame it as it's good, which is good. I mean, that's what we should try and do, is sort of take advantage of it. You know, the other thing, like in my case as well, though, is that I've got a 10-year-old son. Mm-hmm. So between his mother and I, we're on full time. We've got to keep him engaged, it changes the rhythm of things.
Has this been a good time to introduce a 10-year-old to Shakespeare if he hasn't kind of delved into it yet?
No. No, it hasn't. Interesting, but no, I don't think, I don't know. You know, when he was younger, when he was a baby, he would have, and until he was 5 years old, he came to Shakespeare in the Park all the time. So maybe it's, you know, somewhere lodged in there, the fond, nostalgic memory. But we'll see. Maybe when he's a little older, he'll get into Shakespeare.
Yeah. Well, Paul, thank you so much for this time. It's really interesting to hear that thought. And I think hearing about The Tempest in this way is good food for thought. We'll leave it with a piece that you're going to do from The Tempest.
You do look, my son, in a moved sort, as if you were dismayed. Be cheerful, sir! Our revels now are ended. These our actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits, and are melted into air, into thin air. And, like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-cap towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherits shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Sir, I am vexed. Bear with my weakness. My brain is troubled. Be not disturbed with my infirmity. If you be pleased, retire into my cell and there repose. A turn or two I'll walk to still my beating mind.
That was Paul Hopkins. Thank you so much for taking the time, and I hope you're writing it out safely and happily in Kitchener.
Thank you. Really nice chatting with you. All the best, Montreal.
That was Paul Hopkins, former head of Repercussion Theater, and I so enjoyed his monologue. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. I'm Sarah DeAy. Tonight, we celebrate Bill Shakespeare himself. Actress Dara Mondu has appeared in Repercussion's Shakespeare in the Park. She got in touch with me during a study break to share her thoughts and perform her go-to monologue for auditions. So how have you been these last couple of weeks?
Been kind of adjusting to not having places to go or people to see. I'm a proudly identifying extrovert. I'm just one of those unfortunate people who needs people. So being like all alone by myself to collaborate and create things is a bit strange for me. So I'm looking forward to when this is all over in the height of summer.
Has this affected you in terms of projects being put on hold?
The most immediate concern I had was going to be the Fringe Festival, but they've just postponed that to next year. So all of us still have our like spaces available, which is really fine and dandy. So like all the preparation we've done is not in vain or anything. Plus we get like another 12 months to, I guess, refine the original works that we were working on and kind of add to that. So it's kind of a blessing. Like I'm trying to look at it like, okay, this is an opportunity to really enrich my approach to like the one woman show I was going to do for Fringe and kind of approach it that way. But it's obviously like super disappointing and makes time just feel meaningless and long. So
so you have been performing in a couple of Shakespeare in the Park productions. What's going through your mind as we kind of this hour talk about the Bard and, you know, what we can take from his canon? What is going through people's minds as we are in this very strange time in our lives?
I guess this is like a wonderful time to approach the literature that otherwise would be really intimidating. That like, I know when I first started like at university doing kind of classical literature studies right after theater school, it was really helpful for me to have someone to hold my hand. But what you really need is a lot of time. Like someone else can give you the spark notes, you know, there's a lot of great, there's this great rise of BookTube, of just like YouTubers who like review books now of more like contemporary publications. So that's a really great way to approach it. So I don't know, it can be a great opportunity to indulge in the literature that we might find really intimidating that otherwise we wouldn't want to be like, I don't know, seen trying to read in public or seem like not really getting the point of. So if anybody's got like a big copy of like the Infinite Jest or like all the King Henry plays, for example, now's a great time to get involved in those and see if you can't like piece it together, because there's just no shame in it. I guess like if we're approaching isolation from with like an eye to Shakespeare, then there's that meme going around that like, oh, he wrote King Lear in quarantine, which like, I don't know if that convinces me so much, because King Lear doesn't just happen overnight. You still need like a huge like cast to sort of bounce ideas off of and lots of editing in the process. So it'll be the kind of springboard, a nice little like deluge, a little watershed moment for us to get ideas out on paper and get ideas flowing, hopefully, so we can come together and create something more streamlined.
I personally keep coming back to that King Lear line because it's almost like a productivity rally. Like, if Shakespeare could do this, what could you do with all this time? And your comment reminded me of Amanda Kellogg earlier in the show at Repercussion saying, well, you know, he didn't just sit down and write all throughout a quarantine. Like, he was probably doing other stuff and, like, drinking and or doing other things with his time. And I found that kind of comforting because we don't just wake up in the morning and sit down at our computers or at desks. And,
oh, I don't wake up in the morning.
No.
I think a lot of writers can identify with the, like, creepy quiet of the wee hours of the morning as being a really fertile time. But that's exactly when you write, like, your absolute madness down on paper that you can hopefully edit in the morning or, like, read to a friend and have that, like, refined or something. So I was like, I'm glad Amanda tapped into that because, like, the best part of Shakespeare is that he's, like, a Renaissance man in a way. He's, like, anticipating this great movement of, like, living a full life, you know. You don't get jokes and tragedies the way he writes them by only, like, being, like, a disciplined kind of machine of theater. It takes being more of a well-rounded human being.
Well said. So you have a selection for us that you would like to share in this moment. Tell me about what you chose.
I have this particular monologue in my back pocket that I love using for auditions, and it's from Henry VI, Part 1, which is, like, part of a trilogy of different plays about the generations of King Henrys that kind of preceded Shakespeare's time by about, like, 50, like, 60 years, like, all the way up to, like, another, like, 100 years before him, I think. So he's kind of doing, like, he's approaching this in a historical way. He's, like, reviewing his own nation's political history for, like, this epic theatrical approach. I think it's kind of, like, the fact that these plays are so long and so verbose with such expansive characters and how every play kind of expands on that or, like, focuses in on new ones. It's a bit like Shakespearean Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know? It's, like, a completely huge undertaking for him to do. So, at this scene, King Charles has been told that there is a young maid that can assist with their battle against the English. And that historical character that Victor picked is Joan of Arc. And he brought before King Charles and recounts his story of, like, being called by, like, angelic presences in the sky to help assist the French king. And so she's approaching the French, like, King Charles, the King of France, to sort of say, like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Like, you wouldn't expect me to be able to do this, but I'm ready.
Wonderful. But that's such a great selection. And I love hearing the reason behind it. So go ahead.
Dauphin, I am by birth a shepherd's daughter, my wit untrained in any kind of art. Heaven and Our Lady gracious hath it pleased to shine on my contemptible estate. Lo, whilst I waited on my tender lambs, to the sun's parching heat displayed my cheeks, God's mother deigned to appear to me, and in a vision full of majesty willed me to leave my base vocation and free my country from calamity. Her aid she promised and assured success. In complete glory she revealed herself, and whereas I was dark and swart before, with those clear rays which she infused on me, that beauty am I blessed with, which you see. Ask me what questions thou canst possible, and I will answer unpremeditated. My courage try by conduct, if thou darest, and thou shalt find that I exceed my sex. Resolve on this, thou shalt be fortunate if thou receive me for thy warlike mate.
That was Dara Mondu with her selection from Henry VI, Part 1. Dara, thank you so much. I'm just visualizing you in every single audition being like pulling this, as you said, out of your back pocket.
When the grid goes down and we don't have memes or YouTube anymore, it's going to be the actors who have Shakespeare monologues that keep people sane and going. So I hope that we will gather in parks to hear that kind of free and accessible Shakespeare once again, be it with the lights on or not.
I'm looking forward to that day. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your time with us.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
Dara Mondou is an actress in Montreal, and she is working on a Fringe play for 2021. You're listening to the Shakespeare Special on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and online at ckut.ca. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. When I asked for stories about the Bard, I learned that a former classmate of mine, Daniel J. Rao, has a Shakespeare Club here. He founded it with his friend, Eric Jean, and they have been gathering to read the canon on and off since 2009. They call it the Bard's Brawl. Daniel is a journalist and Eric works in communications. I caught up with them this week and asked them how they got started.
Eric and I were classmates in a Shakespeare class at Concordia during our undergrad. And then when I moved back to Montreal in 2009, we met up with another friend of ours and my wife, Stephanie, and we decided, we were talking, nerding out about Shakespeare, and we just decided to start reading Shakespeare one act at a time. And it goes from basically two people, sometimes six people, and we went through, actually, we went through the entire canon over the space of probably 6-7 years, just reading one act each week, more or less. Very, very casual, but we all just liked Shakespeare and liked reading and having a beer and getting together and being a bunch of nerds.
Eric, can you tell me about how do you guys decide what the order is or which play you tackled next? Did you guys do this in alphabetical or chronological order?
We take turns. Whoever is kind of actively reading and wants to pick a play, then we go with whoever's preference. The first time that we went through the canon, we did try to ask people to pick plays that we hadn't already done, but we're pretty loose with that. Not really much of an order.
Some of them were, it was the more OCD in the group wanted to do. If we did like Henry VI part one, they wanted to do part two and three after. But aside from that, we kind of tried to just go between history, comedy, tragedy, and not do too many that were too similar in a row, just to mix it up. It was never very formal.
This is amazing. So you started in 2009, and how frequently do you meet? And did you ever take a break at some point? Like, can you say that you've continuously met since founding?
Not continuously. I think we sort of picked it up again not too long ago. It had been a little while since we'd done one. But definitely on and off. I'm trying to think. How long, Dana, would you say our sort of last break was?
So we usually have a couple of months. Winter months tend to be, but now it's an internal winter because, you know, no one can go outside. And it's cold. Why is it still cold?
Yeah.
Anyway, we would have a couple of months where it depends on how many people were around. People moved away or whatever, and so we kind of didn't have anybody. Then we kind of rejoin with different people, whoever wanted to join. So a couple months off. At certain points, we were pretty consistently meeting every week. Once we finished the canon, we tried to do James Joyce's Ulysses, which I love, but it doesn't really draw as many people to come read that type of a book. Whenever you change it, if you try any other playwright, any other book, novel, any other format, doesn't seem to kind of keep, people don't have interest in it as much for some reason.
And why do you think that is?
I think it's Shakespeare. People, even if they aren't lit geeks, even if they have no interest in theater or anything, will always kind of, out of curiosity, kind of, me and Eric are both pretty chill, and neither of us care if you can't pronounce things right or can't read properly. Like, read properly, that's kind of a stupid thing to say. But so
yeah, we're not looking to recruit actors. It's really, you read it to the best of your ability and you try to make sense of it together.
But I think the curiosity factor with Shakespeare, mm-hmm. everybody knows who he is, and so they'll think like, oh, okay, well, what's not going to kill me? I'll show up, have a beer, and read a bit. And a lot of people get like really into it.
Yeah.
It's first it was kind of surprising. Now I'm kind of just expected. People who have no theater or literature background get more into the play and will jump on more characters than like Eric or I will.
So how do people find you?
I was going to say a lot of it's just kind of word of mouth, like people that Daniel and I know. Daniel's a much better and more active recruiter than I am. But yeah, it's generally it's just people that in our you know, general circle. You know, as Daniel mentioned, we you know, some people occasionally end up moving away or they get busy, and so we have kind of a cycling, people coming in and out. I'll just like tell people about it and they'll be like, gosh, I kind of want to try that. Or.
And so now in the age of physical distancing, are you still meeting up virtually?
I did my first Zoom conversation with some friends and I'm like, oh, wait a second, we could do this with the Bard Ball because everyone's at home and not connecting. So I set it up and we met on Sunday and we just Zoomed. We were doing Antony and Cleopatra, and so we had about 4 or 5 people Zoom together, which actually worked really well.
Yeah.
And we've done two or three?
Three or four, maybe even.
Is it comforting right now to turn to something that you were doing, you know, before this lockdown and the pandemic, and to still have that connection? It must be special.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, it's a little bit of normalcy, despite the weirdness. And like Daniel said, actually, that format works really well. Everybody can sit on their couch or wherever and enjoy their drink alone and yet not alone. So I find it very comforting.
Yeah, and we've got a friend in Ontario, and I'm actually thinking of inviting some of our friends that have moved away so they can join too if they want. And something that is really kind of nice to have that connection through someone, through a playwright who's been dead for hundreds of years.
And we've talked about this on the show tonight. There's talk of how Shakespeare in quarantine wrote King Lear, one of the best plays ever.
He wrote Antony and Cleopatra too.
Yeah.
Seems like quarantining was something that probably happened every other year, way back when. Any interest from within the group to tackle those plays is something that is kind of topical at the moment?
I'm sure there is. Like, it's sort of a newer crew that we've got right now, but some of them are just getting more comfortable with reading. But we were talking about that, like in Romeo and Juliet, there's a quarantine features in that play, and kind of when you read these plays, you realize that this was something that was quite common back then and wouldn't have shaken the society as much as it does now. And I was just reading about Thucydides talking about Athens and the plague, and everyone's like, oh, man. Like it was not anything that was that different.
I wanted to ask both of you if there's any themes or any plays in particular that you're thinking about right now that feel especially relevant or prescient from within the canon, you know, that you'd like to reread.
There's always ones I like going back to. I chose Antony and Cleopatra because I kind of just, it's one of those ones that there's so much going on, it's harder to understand, but I definitely think of the ones like Timon of Athens where there's a lot of solitary soliloquies. Honestly, Romeo and Juliet is a fun one because of how quarantine plays into that plot. But it's what I find, because I've read all of the plays, Eric read them and we both studied them and seen them a bunch, and I kind of like going through plays that people either know nothing about or they know the play but have not actually looked at it and seen how interesting and intricate it is and how relevant they are, how the themes continue today. I noticed that Patrick Stewart, he's been reading sonnets every day on Instagram. So that was another thing that kind of inspired me to do it, was seeing Captain Picard. He's so great. So,
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And I keep thinking that he's posting this on social media, he's reaching like a wider swath of people that may not have known too much. They may know about Shakespeare, but not know about the sonnets and how beautiful they are. So it's nice that he's sharing that. Pretty unbelievable that you guys started this out as students over 10 years ago, and you've managed to keep up something like this that's just for fun fairly regularly over a decade.
Yeah, we did a lot of other stuff too. We had a podcast briefly, and then we also created a couple of lit journals that were really fun. I think it's about like being friends with people, and like people will always get together. I mean, Eric and I, obviously, and my wife Stephanie are all like very good friends, and it's a way we've been able to meet lots of other people too. And like, it's funny that like even thinking about it, how it's over a decade that we've been kind of like doing this, and it's not like I'm bored or have any reason to. Sometimes we stop because people can't do it or whatever, but
I think that kind of relaxed attitude to it is part of the reason that we've been able to keep it up so long. So it's not, you know, we're flexible. If people can't show up, we'll move the dates. And there's no pressure to perform or no obligation, and so kind of easy. I feel it's kind of easy for us to keep it up. I think that has a lot to do with how people are often taught. You know, their exposure to Shakespeare in their life is often in school. There's often essays written about it. It's treated with a lot of kind of reverence. And we just kind of like to joke about it, and we are happy to laugh at the crude jokes or kind of make comments about how we don't understand them. I think that's something that, particularly for people, like Dana said, that aren't actors or maybe aren't coming from like a literary background, it's something that makes it a little more accessible to them, and that they can take or leave and don't have to, they don't have to take too seriously.
Well, guys, thank you so much for taking some of your time to speak with me about this. It sounds great. And you can find the Bard Brawl on Facebook. Is that a good way if someone's hearing this and wants to be in touch or join?
Yeah, Facebook, or we also have an Instagram too.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Pleasure.
Daniel J. Rao and Eric Jean, co-captains of the Bard's Brawl, a group that meets to read the canon over beers. You are listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. I'm Sarah DeAy. My final conversation brings me to Jacqueline Van de Geer, a Dutch permanent resident in Montreal and performance artist. She selected one of the best of Shakespeare's monologues. Growing up in Holland, Jacqueline did not have the same appreciation for the Bard. She saw it as an English thing, but one summer night changed all that. How have you been, Jackie?
I must confess, up and down. Like, the first week I was really mourning, because I thought, like, yeah, it's good. It's a good decision, because this is a very strange virus, and it operates very mysterious. So, we have to protect each other and ourselves. But yeah, you know, I had some nice projects coming up, and it was one after another, of course, postponed. But yeah, what does postpone mean? We cannot, I don't know about you, but the future is very, very vague. But now I get into a kind of a rhythm, and I must say I'm also appreciating the so-called smaller things of life, like the sun pouring into my living room now, for instance, and, you know, my cats, and having time to really make good meals for a change, that kind of thing. So, yeah, and I'm happy with the internet and with the Zoom. And, yeah, I write a lot. I do yoga online. So I couldn't complain, actually, no.
I'm glad to hear you're taking that view. And I know that your mother is also in Holland, right? You still have family back there.
Yes, I was supposed to see her. I was to see my friends in Leipzig, actually, while I was waiting for you to call me. I was actually writing some letters to my friends in the Netherlands and to some friends in Leipzig. Yeah, that is strange, but my mother understands, and of course my friends in Leipzig and in Berlin, they're all in the same boat, you know, that's so weird about this period, we are all in the same boat, so yeah, it's weird, and yeah, I hope I can see my mother around Christmas time, we'll see, there again, we have no idea, but we can call, so that's good.
And do you speak with her every now and then?
Yeah, I do. I actually called her this morning. But, you know, my mother, she is 87 now, and she is she's living really in her bubble. She has the first signs of Alzheimer, but it's a happy Alzheimer. So actually, I'm quite content with that. She doesn't notice it so much, that there's a virus going on. She has people that drop by. She's still living independently, and she has twice a day a nurse that drops by to give her her medication and to help her with some things. And she says, oh, it's so funny, they're wearing masks nowadays, it's so funny. And I'm like, I'll leave it like that.
Why? Okay. It's the latest style.
Yes, apparently. Yeah. Oh, why not, you know, it's fine.
So, Jacqueline, growing up in Holland, was Shakespeare as big a deal, you know, as a kid as it was here, where we like in my high school, we did a different play every year. Like, does it have that same kind of presence?
No, I must say, like in high school, I got my language lessons, so for Germany it was Kafka, like that teacher was totally thrilled with Kafka, and for English it was mentioned, and I loved classical ballet when I was a teenager, so I had like Romeo and Juliet, classical ballet music. I knew what it was about, you know, but other than that, I had no idea. I did Midsummer Night's Dream at theater school, and I thought it was fun, you know, I was the one who is the donkey. It was fun, you know, with the wall and everything. Yeah, no, that was fun, but it was not such a big deal. It was really when I immigrated here that you had Shakespeare in the Park, and I know that my first Shakespeare in the Park was, I think, in Westmount, and it was The Tempest. It's quite a long time ago. It was maybe 2006 or 2007. It was extremely well done. It was great, and and then you penetrate a little bit the English theater community here, and then it dawned on me that I thought, wow, Shakespeare is, it's really alive here, it's really, really alive, and that's when I got into it a little bit more.
Seeing the appreciation for it, like that other people were kind of into it, that's kind of interesting, that was kind of your way in, is that it was almost like you looked around and said, well, if other people like it, I could be into it as well. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. It was, and then of course it dawns on me that he wrote a lot. Like, that man was a machine. He wrote a lot of plays, and then you get to know the plays, and then, you know, sometimes I go back to the Netherlands, and then I saw an adaptation in the Netherlands of Othello that I really liked. Like, Othello was of Moroccan descendant there, and so they kind of created a kind of immigrant point of view there. It was well done, I thought. And and here I saw, of course, the Shakespeare in the Park. I've always, kind of followed that. But it's not that I'm, how can I say that? I see the quality, but I'm not as lyrical about it as other people might be. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I find it's good, but I'm not crazy, crazy, crazy about it. I see the quality. I see, the writing is good. The stories are great, but I actually have two preferences. It's Othello and Macbeth. And those two are really that I think, yeah, those are, oh yeah, meaty, nice masterpieces with emotions that are dark and forbidden, but there they are, you know. Like, I really like that of both plays, yeah.
So you mentioned to me there's two plays that you like especially. One of them is Macbeth. So I asked you if you would read Lady Macbeth's famous monologue. Can you tell me a little bit more about this moment in the show, in the play?
My knowledge of Macbeth, the story is actually from a movie from Polanski. He made that movie after that his wife Sharon Tate and her friends were brutally murdered. So it's a very dark movie. It's in the 70s. And it's gruesome. That story is really gruesome. But the way I understand it, this Lady Macbeth, she's very ambitious. And of course, she's living in a time that I think women were not allowed to be directly ambitious, you know, so she operates actually through her husband. And when she gets the news that there has been a profession by this witchcraft trio, she really, you know, she really digs that, and she totally manipulates him in murdering the king. And then actually, I don't know, he gets bloodthirsty. Ghosts are coming up, and you know, at the moment of this monologue, she is really, I think, filled with guilt, filled with grief, filled with fear, filled with very mentally unstable, and she's hopping in and out of the past, actually, the way I see it. I don't know if I'm right about that. She's not in a very happy state.
No, she's not. She seems quite tormented. Whenever you're ready, I'd love to hear you do your rendition of this moment in the Scottish play.
Out, damned spot. Out, I say. One, two. Oh, why then? It's time to do it. Hell is murky. Fie, my lord. Fie, soldier and afeard. What need we fear? Who knows it when none can call our power to account? Yet, who would have thought the old man to have had so much blood in him? The Thane of Fife had a wife. Where is she now? What? Will these hands ne'er be clean? No more of that, my lord, no more of that. You mar all with this starting. Here's the smell of the blood still. All the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little head. Wash your hands. Put on your nightgown. Look not so pale. I tell you yet again, Banquo's buried. He cannot come out on his grave. Too bad. Too bad. There's knocking at the gate. Come. Come, come, come. Give me your hand. What's done cannot be undone. Too bad. Too bad. Too bad. Well, that's it with my thick Dutch accent.
Thank you. That was really enjoyable.
Thank you.
It really strikes me how you can hear the two sides of her, like the side that seems to be still so bloodthirsty and the one that is kind of so haunted.
Yeah, there's a lot of blood in that play. They get dragged in to be forced to keep on killing and killing and killing. And she wants to end it, but she can't end it. She can only end her own life. It's very dark. Anyway, I kind of love it, though.
Beautifully put. Well, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me.
Well, thank you, Sarah. It's lovely to hear your voice, especially in these times, and it's wonderful. Keep up the good work and keep safe and sane.
Jacqueline Vandegeer, performance artist in Montreal. And that is time for Upstage, the show about theater on the radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. You can re-listen to this episode online at ckut.ca. I will leave you with Patrick Stewart, the English actor better known as Captain Picard, but also a great Shakespearean talent. In the midst of the pandemic and the shutdown, he has been posting a sonnet a day to his Twitter account, at Sir Pat Stew. During this rough time, it really makes for something special to tune into. Go check them out. Stay safe, be well, talk soon, and happy birthday, Shakespeare. I'm Sarah Day. We'll talk to you next time on Upstage.
Winter's ragged hand, defacing thee thy summer, ere thou be distilled. Make sweet some vial. Treasure thou some place with beauty's treasure, ere it be self.
We've reached 7 o'clock on this special Earth Day. After the drone of the aeroplane engine fades away, the American robin's evening song begins to be heard. You are listening to a special 24-hour Earth Day broadcast of the soundscape from the Tektexan Marsh in unceded Wissanic territory on Sterna Island, British Columbia. The sounds you are hearing are synchronized to your local time. For more information, visit wetlandproject.com. We invite you to add your voice to the soundscape during this broadcast by sending a tweet to @wetlandproject. This is Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5. FM. Do continue listening and have a lovely evening.